Hi, thanks for tuning in to season 5 of the Aced It podcast, where we translate science into sense so you can learn about research in the justice and health fields without having to read a lengthy journal article or report. This season, we're trying something new. Interviews. In each episode, you'll hear from top experts working on research within the JCoin network. I'm so excited. It's like you get a glimpse behind the scenes with these fascinating folks as they talk about what they're learning, the struggles they faced in their projects, and what amazing findings they have so far. Findings that will surely make a difference in the lives of so many. It's almost too good to be true. So with that, I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas. With ACID, I do most of the work for you. All you have to do is listen. ACID is a cool and super helpful product brought to you by the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. For more info, check out jcoinctc.org. Now, let's get started. Welcome to this episode of the Aced It podcast. I am incredibly excited to have with me today Jenny Beacon of Texas Christian University's Institute of Behavioral Research. Jenny is a research scientist and also works on the TCU hub of JCoin, the Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network. Jenny, if you would just take a couple minutes and introduce yourself, that would be a great way to get us started.
Thank you, Danielle, for inviting me to be a part of today's podcast. I'm Jenny Beacon, and I'm a research scientist from the Institute of Behavioral Research at TCU, Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, Texas. By training, I'm an implementation scientist with a master's in industrial organizational psychology and a PhD in experimental psychology. At the IBR, Institute of Behavioral Research, I serve as a principal investigator and lead scientist for 3 NIDA-funded projects that address the need for family-based as well as virtual delivery intervention options to help adolescents currently involved in the justice system address motivation and logistical challenges of getting started or continuing to receive substance use services. As well, I also serve as project director for the JCoin TCU Hub. The TCU Hub has expert collaborators from the University of New Mexico, Loyola University, TASC, and UNM CASA. So I'm one of the scientists working on this project.
Thank you for that great introduction. Now I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I'm going to start with, tell me a little bit about the goals of your JCoin project.
The ultimate goal of our JCoin TCU Hub project is to improve local, community, public health, and safety outcomes for re-entering justice-involved individuals who use or are at risk for using opioids. Specifically, our aim is to increase access to and retention in substance use and MOUD, that stands for Medications for Opioid Use Disorder Treatment, among adults with a history or risk of using opioids, who are placed on parole after a period of incarceration. So ultimately, what we want to learn about in our research questions, they center on comparing 2 approaches at implementing system change.
Got it. Okay, 2 approaches. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you answered these questions?
One approach we call vertical. It's where we have system change that's delivered from a top-down approach, where all units within a participating parole department, for example, receive training and rollout of system change approach all at one time. This is what we consider standard practice, SOP, in corrections and likely most organizations. What we're comparing that to in our other half of the randomized control trial is a vertical rollout. And this is where to the vertical rollout is a horizontal implementation approach. Ultimately, what we'd like to compare the vertical rollout approach to is something that we call horizontal implementation approach. This is where one lead-off unit within a participating parole department pilots the system change, and then they train other units until the new practice rolls out across the entire agency. Ultimately, we suspect, based on other research studies, that the vertical approach should result in faster uptake with lower sustained use. However, the horizontal approach should result in slower uptake and a higher sustained use.
And just a little bit more, how do you specifically answer the research question?
We'd like to go about answering our questions by looking at the vertical and horizontal system change approaches that we're comparing as nested within a large 2.5-year implementation intervention design across 18 communities in Texas, Illinois, and New Mexico. The design is informed by a well-recognized implementation science framework I'm sure you've heard of called EPIS, Exploration, Preparation, Implementation, and Sustainment Model. The 2.5-year community collaborative starts with a multi-level analytic approach to assess the attitudes, the policy, use, and client receipt of 73 core indicators along the behavioral health service cascade that we've created based on the ACM criteria. The activities include staff and agency surveys, review of agency client service records, and a needs assessment to better understand the service continuity process between parole and health agencies in the community. In addition to and after this multi-level analytic approach, we're going to then kick off in each of our 18 communities the bundled implementation approach that we call the OTLM, which really is the opioid treatment linkage model. This includes a community feedback report based on what we've learned through the collaborative analytic review of current practices and development of an implementation blueprint that addresses targeted prioritized goals as selected by and developed by the workforce within the local parole health community. A part of the OTLM process that we've created in the preparation phase, we have a flagship product that we call our OTLM Resource Guide and a series of short education webinars. Specifically, this serves as a resource on best and innovative practices along a cascade of services to address each one of those 73 indicators that we have identified. It's informed by research studies, community initiatives, state, federal, local programming. And some of those examples include the Healing Community Study, the SAMHSA TIPS, ACM Criteria, and JCOIN Cooperative, lots of resources available there. And these are offered for continuing education and training credits to participating parole and health agencies. The materials used in this resource guide and the webinars will serve as the springboard for how participating parole health partner communities can address their existing and prioritized gaps in their service system. Specifically, they're going to start to identify and implement from these resource guides and webinars some innovative and best practices to address those gaps.
Wow, that sounds like a very comprehensive study with a lot of moving parts. Research combined with materials and resources. That's a lot. You have a lot going on. Did COVID by chance happen to change anything about the way you were doing your study?
So what's changed since COVID? Well, not too much. I'm sure that's not a surprise to you, but it's been a little slower connecting with stakeholders because, well, they're dealing with many stressors these days. We're constantly re-examining the way in which we collect data, and we're engaging in intervention delivery ways that are flexible to the changing priorities and the safety concerns, except we're trying to really look at and maintain that fidelity and integrity to our intended original scientific design. So it's a constant balance.
Okay, thanks. And what can you tell us about the results so far?
I think some of our most interesting findings are around the area of collaboration. For instance, one of our team members in conversation with an individual currently in the justice system stated that she'd been using drugs for the last year. She confided this to her corrections officer and specifically asked for a drug screening and assessment so she could receive some kind of treatment. She had no other ideas of where to go for help. This was in July. At that visit, she did not receive a screening or assessment, and she quit using on her own. But it wasn't until October, 3 months later, that she was called in to the corrections office for an assessment. The client stated she did not want to bring up her drug use during the assessment because it would trigger her. Just a few days after her assessment, she relapsed. Months later, she has yet to receive those results of her assessment and the plans on her drug treatment. This is a sad case. Doesn't happen always, but it's our goal in the study to help parole health communities to prevent examples and experiences like this from happening. Through facilitated collaboration, we hope to see that clients are screened and assessed in a timely manner, resulting in treatment initiation.
Can you tell me just a little bit more?
We're hearing about collaboration challenges from our parole health stakeholders as well. These each offer great areas of opportunity for improvement as we work collaboratively with our communities. There are instances where it seems there is a need for more accountability for individuals on parole to attend treatment sessions. For instance, the parole officer could serve as a more supportive, active role in promoting attendance. And it would also be good if, rather than optional, treatment and attending treatment was a part of the necessary case plan process. Additionally, we visited with communities where drug tests, otherwise known as urinalysis, is only administered when there is suspected use rather than on a random basis, which ultimately can result in many service needs not being identified. Furthermore, parole officers may not be using positive drug screen results to quickly jumpstart changes in service needs. But with all of these opportunities for improvement, there are many successes. For instance, we've had lots of stakeholder conversations where parole supervisors and officers may hear for the first time the successes of using MOUDs. Providing open, friendly, collaborative discussions between sometimes siloed corrections health partners has resulted in expanded knowledge, clarity, and relevance of the use of MOUDs.
That's great. Thank you so much for that. Thinking about the future, though, what comes next for your team?
So ultimately, where can we go from here? So far, we've rolled out in our study to 11 of 18 sites across two states, including New Mexico and Illinois, with plans to start in Texas with our first of six communities next month. The next few months hold an ambitious and rewarding flurry of activity as we plan to continue delivery of our multi-level implementation strategy bundle to all of our 18 communities. We have plans to deploy our flagship opioid treatment linkage model resource guide and series of webinars within the next couple of months as well. Furthermore, we also have a flurry of activity that's happening with our analytic teams who are diligently developing qualitative codebooks to analyze our needs assessment data.
Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. I'd like to say thank you to your team at the ASTIP podcast and the JCOIN Collaborative for providing these opportunities to share what we're learning with others and with the hope that in the end, we're supporting those doing the good work to help vulnerable populations. I'd also like to thank NIDA, who provided funding for this study. The interpretations conclusions from this presentation are entirely mine and do not necessarily reflect the position of NIDA, NIH, or NIH HEAL Initiative. Finally, I'd like to thank our TCU JCOIN Hub multiple principal investigator team, including Dr. Kevin Knight, as well as our esteemed team of research, clinical, and public health colleagues. Thank you again.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Dr. Beacon, for being with us. We greatly appreciated our time with you today, and your team is doing such amazing work. Congratulations on the work and keep it up. That wraps another episode of the ASTIT podcast. We thank you for listening to ASTIT, where we translate science into sense. Also, remember, you can find one-page summary overviews written in plain language for all of the research we cover on this podcast on our website, jcoinctc.org. Our conveniently packaged research summaries may help you remember what you heard here, and they will help you translate this research to your staff, friends, students, or colleagues. ASTIT is part of the NIDA-funded Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN. Through the Coordination and Translation Center, CTC, housed at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. Tune in again for more science and more sense with ASTIT.